Greet each one in Jesus' name this evening. You may turn to 1 John chapter 4. Unless you have it memorized and are ready to say it tonight, we're not going to, for sake of time, read it together. We've been looking at 1 John 4, verses 17 through 21 for memory verse. Verse 17 being somewhat of a theme, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. If you think about the devotional meditation, if you really value Jesus, if he is precious to you, you'll be at a place where you can have boldness in the day of judgment. But when I was 6 years old, I said the memory verse in revivals at Donors when Brother Paul Freed was the evangelist. I was six and Paul was the evangelist. It's Malachi 3:16, and it caught Paul's attention. And never did I realize that one day I would serve in the ministry with Paul. So, I don't know where God will call you yet. I appreciate the good response. It's exciting to see people who get excited about the Word. Tonight, for a message, I struggled trying to figure out what to share. And the Lord finally led me to this message. I have shared this before. But it's a message that is on my heart as in the day and age that we live. And it's a subject that young people have to sort through and sometimes lose their way in it. But it's actually a subject, I believe, where we as adults have the problem first. And it creates difficulty for youth to figure out what to do with the problem. Now, before I introduce the subject, go with me to one of my favorite verses as a youth growing up, 1 Corinthians 10:13. And thinking about the struggle of the Christian life and thinking about faithfulness and following God and temptation, 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." Tremendous verse of power, but that's not the verse I want to look at tonight. Do you know what comes next? Wherefore, and when you see that word, wherefore, it's a connecting word that says, because of what came, in light of what came, and with what I just said, my dearly beloved, flee idolatry. I'd like to talk about idolatry tonight. The title is simply Freed from Idolatry. Now, when we think about idolatry, we often think about bowing down to wood and stone images. The African village and bowing down to this god of wood and stone and worshiping them. If I'd ask for a raise of hands tonight, how many of you feel like you're tempted with idolatry? It would be a tough question, and probably a few of our hands would go up. But till we're done with the message, a lot of our hands should go up. Now, idolatry, the dictionary says, is the worship of idols. But then it also says this: it is the blind or excessive devotion to something. It's devotion to something. And I heard the devotional meditation tonight about this word, precious. Things that you call precious, things that are highly esteemed, we should take a look at them. We could also say it's an inordinate desire for things, devotion to possessions, to sports, to riches, to luxuries. Any wrong love is idolatry. Anything that robs God of what is rightfully His, whether it's time or money or faith or security or worship, is idolatry. It takes away from that which should be devoted to God. Now, I understand there is a difference in your culture here in the South versus church life in Pennsylvania, with the economic flow of means that we have, is probably greater. And there's a greater pressure on this subject of idols. And what we do with our means and what we can love and pursue. But I believe it's one of the things that young people come up through And I didn't ask the young people this question, but perhaps you're sitting here tonight and you're growing up and you're in your early teens and you're thinking about, you know, I've got this job and I'm making some money because I want to acquire this thing. It might be a 30-06 or a 30-30. It might be a Matthews bow. It might be a Honda Accord. It might be a, okay. That's what happened. In our youth, there's a lot of things. And maybe my dad was poor and always drove an old Chevy Flipper and I'm going to get a nice VW or whatever. And I have my sights on that and I'm earning and I'm saving and I'm being frugal because of something I want to get. I must also say tonight in a message like this, I have a hard time using examples for the sister side. So it might be a little bit skewed. The brethren might get a little bit more beat up on the examples tonight than sisters. I should get my wife to help me figure out more examples for the sister side. But idolatry. Now, we start into this subject, it's easy to say, wait a minute. Idolatry is worship and it's not about things. Go with me to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. Colossians 3, verse 5. Says this. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. The love of things. That's what covetousness is. It doesn't say an idolatry, which is the worship of an image. It says covetousness, which the end result is idolatry. Ephesians chapter 5. We're not far from there. Ephesians 5 and verse 5. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. And you see, an idolater will not enter heaven. You can't stand before God unashamed in the judgment, like our theme verse, with idols in your pocket. You got to get rid of them. Can't have them. Go with me back to Luke chapter 16. Jesus was talking to some hard Pharisees. They had some heart issues. We know what was wrong with them. We're not like them, we think. Luke chapter 16, verse 13. The words of Jesus: no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. And this is about that precious word that Brother Lyndon talked about. What is precious and what do you hold on to? You cannot serve God and mammon. And the Pharisees also, who were covetous, heard all these things and they derided him. Why? Because they didn't like the light, like we talked about last night. They were covetous and wanted to remain covetous and wanted to excuse themselves and say, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And he said unto them, ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knoweth your hearts. And listen, this is one that in North America we must get a hold of. You must get a hold of it around the world to be God's children. But this is a hard saying of Jesus: that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God. Now, you know what the word abomination means? In the North, we have groundhogs that get hit on the road. I think down here you have, what do you call them? Armadillos, okay? And I know some of you take a walk along the road. I know this example's a little gross, but this will illustrate abomination. You have an armadillo killed along the road. He's about 3 days old, and the flies found him and everything else that comes after that, and he reeks. You can smell him 250 feet away. And you're walking down the road. It's along the edge of the road. That would represent abomination, okay? How many of you walk over there and just, oh my, an armadillo? No, you go to the other side of the road. It's just horrible. You don't want to see it. When Jesus uses the word abomination, that's what he's looking at. And when something is highly esteemed among men and men are oohing and awing over it, it's a rotten groundhog, rotten armadillo in God's sight. It's hard for us to fathom that. It's hard for us to get that in our hearts. But that's the economy of God's kingdom. And so you and I have to think about it whenever we have picked up something that turns men's head and like, if it's highly esteemed among men, think twice. Why? Why does it stink to God? Because it robs him of worship. It turns men's heads to that when they should be turned to the Creator and worshiping God. I know that's hard language, and I know that it's easy to about disconnect on this very point. It really is. Because come on. Well, that's the words of Jesus. That's not my words. 1 John 5, little children, keep yourselves from idols. Now, if we go back to our 1 Corinthians 10 passage, I meant to refer to the beginning of the passage while we were there and I forgot. But 1 Corinthians 10, we looked at that verse that comes right after that promise of God giving us strength to be victorious and the challenge is to avoid idolatry. And I don't believe that we can experience verse 13, God giving us grace to be victorious while we're living in idolatry. Back up to the beginning of the chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and notice the context. This is the context of the story of Israel. And as they were coming out from Egypt, it's the story of the golden calf. Verse 5, but with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things are examples to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Where was that occasion? That occasion was in Exodus 32. And so I'd like to go there. I'd like to define idolatry from Exodus 32. Because 1 Corinthians says this is written for our learning. It's written for us to learn something and avoid this pitfall. What is idolatry? And so I'd like to take a close look at idolatry from Exodus 32. Let's read verses 1 through 7 to get it fresh in our minds. Exodus 32, verse 1, and when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him. And Aaron said unto them, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives and of your sons and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. And all the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them unto Aaron. And he received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early on the morrow and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, go get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. And he goes on to tell what Moses shall do. And Moses comes down from the mountain. You know that story. We'll stop with that right there. But there's the idolatry that 1 Corinthians 10 is talking about and says it's written so that we wouldn't do this. What was this idolatry? This golden calf. Number one, it was something they turned to for security and direction. They said, Moses, we don't know what happened to him. We don't have a leader. Where are we going to go from here? It's something they turn to for security and direction. Empty hearts turn to idols for something to fasten their affection onto and feel somewhat secure in them, feel like there's a future, feel like you can go do something with it. Empty hearts often long for idols for finding fulfillment and meaning and joy in life and a purpose. That's a wide open heart for idolatry. The second thing that I want you to notice is that it cost them their gold. The very first thing that the idol grabbed was their gold. The very first thing was their valuables. I want your gold. You know what the second thing it grabbed for was? Their time. That's point number three. It claimed their time. Listen, when you have something that people turn to for security and direction, that first costs a bunch of money, grabs a pal of gold, and then asks for their time, you perhaps found an idol. That's Exodus 32, idolatry. It doesn't stop with that. Well, let's see. Verse 5 is the time that I'm referring to. It claimed their time. Verse 5, he said, let's set aside a day. Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord. Take off from work. Well, they weren't working. Well, what were they doing? Well, set aside everything. We take a day off to go do this. It took time. It took their money, and it took time. There's a lot of things in America that people spend money for, and then after they spent the money for them, they got to take off from work to go use them. Whether it's a camper or a boat or a... The list goes on and on. The fourth thing is that it involved play and festivity. Leisure time, fun, dancing, food. Notice the social aspect that's part of that. Here's a group of people coming together for a feast to find some security and direction. And I just can't fathom that Aaron would actually say and that the people would say, these be thy gods. Something's wrong. But that's how deceptive idolatry becomes, that you don't even know what you're doing. It involved play and festivity. And the fifth thing is it involved a time of religious confusion. They said it's a feast to the Lord around a calf. Now, I want to ask you something tonight. As you think about North America and plenty of things, and you think about all of the American dream, I want to ask you, can you think of anything that people turn to for security and direction that cost them their gold and cost them their time? It involves play and festivity, and it brings religious confusion. And you probably found some idols. It seems as though Aaron justified this religious experience by tagging it along with spiritual worship. He somehow took this idol thing and said, we're going to do something spiritual with this idol. America has those possibilities for us. We'll get to that. The last thing we need to do tonight is we need to talk about some specifics and test a few things. And that's the difficult time part of a message. That's where a preacher trembles. But we need to talk because there's some idols that America offers us that you can tag a religious aspect along to it and you can feel good with your idol. Now, in all fairness, go with me to 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. We must be fair with the scripture. And I must show you the other side of this, or the balancing side of this. 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. 17, 18, and 19. It says that, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. You can point to that phrase and say, well, God gave us things. He gave us richly things to enjoy. That is in the Bible. But do you see what for context it's in? It's in the context of not trusting in riches, but in the living God. And then go on, verse 18, that they do good and that they be rich in good works, ready to contribute, willing to communicate. And that communicate is not talking. It's communicating with sharing and giving and ministering to. That's what that word means. Laying up in store for themselves a lot of things that they can vacation with when they're retired. Huh? No. Laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life, that they may be ready to stand before God in the day of judgment without being fearful, like our theme verse is. And so Paul says to Timothy that God did give us things to enjoy. It is not wrong to enjoy the things that God created. There's a place for that. But that whole phrase is in the context of enjoying that and enjoying then sharing with others and not piling it up selfishly for myself. Well, let's talk a little bit. Second part of the message, I like to talk about finding our way. You can see where you can see this subject tonight, right? And the pull of things, and I want to buy this, and I want to buy that, and I ought to have this, and I ought to have that. And so when does it become idolatry? There's several things we should think about to find our way. And I cannot answer the question for you totally tonight. An item that you're thinking about or something that you're thinking about, I can't totally answer the question, is it idolatry or not? You'll have to answer it. But I'd like to give you a couple tests, a couple things. And to the young people, these are things you ought to write down. And as you go through life and you're looking at purchases, you're looking at things you want to do, test it with these things. The first test is we need to think about the difference between toys and tools. There's a difference between a toy and a tool. Tools are useful for producing, for the job, for work. Toys are mostly entertainment, pastime, for fun. A pickup truck for work is different than one to carry your ego around in. But some have figured out how to get both of them and justify it because it's for work. Then it becomes hard to figure that. But you know what? You're going to have to be faithful to the Spirit in your own life to say, is this a toy or is this a tool? The difference between toys and tools. Now, children need toys to occupy their time. I say need. Children appreciate toys to occupy their times. In poor countries, they play with sticks and stones. They don't have the tonka toys that we have in America. But the therapy of children having something to build with and to play with and imagine and all of that, children need that. This is one of the reasons why youth is a special time here. As you come up through having legitimately had toys, as you mature and become an adult, you need to move away from toys and into tools. But America offers all kind of toys for adults. And America would like you, as your income increases, to never move out of the toy stage, but keep the toys with you as you go into adult life. And so youth, you find yourself transitioning in this. And so there was a day that to have some hobbies and some of those things it was okay. As a child developing and needing to keep their mind occupied. But as a child gets older, we put away childish things and become men and women and take on serving and work and blessing to the kingdom and leave behind the toys? Or do we leave behind the toys? Do we still have a chest of toys, but big men's toys? Titus 3 says, and let ours also learn to maintain good works for necessary uses that they be not unfruitful. That's about jobs that are a blessing in the community and that doing something. So think about the difference between toys and tools, and that will help us on this subject. Number two, we must think about the subject of stewardship. Everything that I have is God's, and I am a steward, and I will answer to God for how I use it. How much of God's money in my pocket may I blow on myself? Think about it this way. Suppose you had a large business and you built some kind of product and that business was going well and you wanted to sell this product in Europe and you send a salesman over to Europe to set up shop and sell these things and represent your product. And obviously he has travel expenses and he needs a place to stay and he needs to eat. He needs lunch each day when he's at work and there's expenses and you're going to have to foot it because it's your business and he's promoting your product. And you send him with a bank account. You send him with a credit card and here's $10,000 in his pocket to get this thing going. And you return in a month, you go over in a month to see what he's doing. And he has tickets there where he spent $300 for a feast one night, party somewhere. And he bought a four-wheeler to go ripping around on the mountains that are behind him. And he bought this and he bought that. And then now he's spending his time on that. And he's spending your money. And you send him over there to do your work. And he's missing the point. And you smile and say, oh, well, I want you to richly enjoy all things in Europe. Really? Really? You know, when I think about a story like that, I start to feel really funny about some of the expenditures that I've done in my life. Some of the things that I spent money for. Because this is what I have is God's. My time, my talent, my money that I earned is God's. And I'll answer for it one day. And I want to stand before the judge of all the earth and be able to say, this is what I did with it. This is what I spent. This is why I bought this vehicle. This is why I bought this house. This is what I... Do you think God will ask for an account of all those things? You need to think about that. Are you ready to answer? Can you explain why you have... I remember working for Shank Door and hanging garage doors, and I got into a garage one time, and the lady there had this, whatever you call it, she bought shoes, and there, I don't know, I didn't take the time to count the shoes, because Ira didn't pay us to count shoes when we were hanging doors, but there was 40, 50, 60 pairs of shoes in that garage. You don't need 40, 50, 60 pairs of shoes to live. If I have 40 pairs of shoes in my house, will I have to answer to God for having bought 40 pairs of shoes and having them sit around? I think I will. Stewardship. Think about the parable of the talents where God gave one five, he gave two to another one, and he gave one to another fella. Now this fella did not waste the one. He did not spend it on himself. He put it in a napkin and froze it perfectly and returned it perfectly in its condition. And he was condemned because he did not put it to usury. He did not use it and multiply and bless others with it. And he got condemnation for that. What do you think he would have gotten if when the Lord came back, he would have said, well, I went to Hardee's and I spent it on fast food and I bought shoes and shirts and we had a good time, Lord. I'm sorry that the... one talent is gone. If he got condemned for just preserving it and not multiplying it, he would have got worse condemnation for wasting it. It's stewardship. What are you going to answer for your talent? What are you going to answer to God for what you've done with your resources? Many a young person has come through youthful days spending lavishly and then hit adult years and wished for some of that in some of the investments and some of the things in a business life or whatever. They could have used it much more wisely, but they blew it in their youth. And I wonder how many of us will stand before the judgment and realize that we blew money in our youth and in our adulthood and we're ashamed of it before God. We need to think about it. 1 Corinthians 4 says, moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. So the difference between toys and tools, the subject of stewardship to find our way, is this an idol or is this something that is useful and has a purpose and is not claiming my heart? The third thing that we need to think about is the purpose of man. Do you know what the purpose of man is in this life? Do you know why God created you? There's two parts of the purpose of man. Does anybody know what it is?
Bring him glory.
Number one, bring him glory. Number two, you know what? We don't have...
dominion over the earth.
Yes, and serve our fellow man. Dominion over the earth and serve our fellow man. Glorify God and love one another and take care of this earth. And so, as you think about what you're purchasing, does it have anything to do with glorifying God? Does it have anything to do with serving our fellow man and dominion over the earth and caring for our things and, you know, keeping our grass cut and our, you know, some order and decency? And does it have anything to do with that? Or is it outside of that? And the fourth thing we need to think about is social involvements. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. You see, back here in Exodus 32, there was this group, there was this bringing together of like-minded people to worship around the calf with wrong attitudes and wrong worship motives. And it was a social event that pulled them downward and brought God's judgment. Well, so is it a toy? Is it a tool? How does it fit in the subject of stewardship? How does it fit in the subject of my purpose for being here in life?
And how does it fit with social involvement? Is it something that takes me among the ungodly? That's one of the reasons why I don't think, and I know it, tonight it's going to be a little bit hard for me in examples because I'm going to end up saying stuff from the north. And I was just ready to say one of those. This is why I don't believe we should go to the ski slopes. It's a blessing to live in the south. You don't have ski slopes to deal with. You probably have something of the equivalent that I'm not so very much aware of. Maybe it's water skiing. Okay. We should not go and play among the world. We end up socializing. We end up in their parties. We go to if we're not careful, we can go to the ice skating rink. We can go to the golf course. We can go to all of those. And it takes us out playing among the ungodly. And be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Their ways will rub off on us. Their thoughts, their values. Try to think through some of the values that go into some of those sports. I never could figure out why, for exercise, a man would go out on a golf course, pay money to go out and whack a ball around, and then pay money to rent a cart to drive to the next place, and then get out and whack it. And he went out for exercise. And you look at some of that, and it's not the reasoning from heaven. Now, we must do some testing. We must talk about, I just want you to help me think through some things. May I go buy a luxury yacht and put it on the Chesapeake Bay? Probably here it's the Gulf. Can I own a, oh my. you know what yachts go for? You know, there's people that own yachts that are worth $1.5 million. And it's a whole house set up and you can go out for, can I own one of them? And does God smile? And you say, no, Brother Luke. Okay, that's easy. Let's whack that one off. A child of God can't own $1.5 million yacht. But what if I can afford it? What if my business is rolling in all kinds of money and I can afford it? What if I gave $2 million to the church? Could I do $1.5 million on a yacht? If every year I gave $2 million to the church? I'm not going to answer that for you, but you need to think through that. How did God look at it? All right, let's go to something a little closer. Perhaps maybe a bass boat. In our area, bass fishing is a big thing. And so, Susquehanna River or even, yeah. So I want a nice bass boat. And, you know, there's Cabela's and there's Bass Pro Shops and they'll get you outfitted. I don't know what those bass boats go for, but may I spend just $15,000 on a bass boat with a fish finder and some of that equipment to go out bass fishing and be a child of God? May I do that? You think God smiles and says, there's my son. But if it's my thing to take the young boys with me from church to go bass fishing so we can build relationships and we can talk about spiritual things, then it would work, right? No. Now we're going into that religious confusion. I used years back when I taught school, sometimes over the summer, I would drive bus for a coach company. And I took a group of men fishing down to the Chesapeake Bay. I drove the bus down for them, and oh my, they tried to make that fishing. I'm okay with going fishing in the Chesapeake. You go down, you try to catch some fish, and you come back. And if it's done in a moderate way, but they tried to make a whole spiritual thing out of it. And there was prayer beforehand, and trying to help them to understand the Jesus who spent time on the Sea of Galilee and his disciples as fishermen. And come on, if you're going to go fishing, go catch some fish and don't try to put all kinds of religious ties to it. Be a spiritual man while you go and do it and be a testimony, but go and fish. How about hunting equipment? Is it a toy or a tool? So what does it bring back? What are the gains? I suppose hunting in the South probably varies from in the North as well. And I haven't thought through all of those. Some of these examples are really tainted with my Northern viewpoint. But, you know, you look at it and you say, so this kind of money and then this kind of return. You realize you can go out and buy a lot of steak for what some people put into hunting equipment. There's enjoyable, there's a side of it that's leisure, there's a side of it that's maybe some, I remember as a young ordained man, new in the ministry, I had one, I like to go deer hunting, and I did hunted in the woods right behind our house. And one, I was teaching school, so I'd get off at 3 o'clock. I'd go home. I'd sit in my tree stand. It was bow season and it's quiet. And it was still not real, real bitter cold. And so this was a Wednesday night. I needed to teach instruction class. I took my instruction booklet out there in the tree stand, and I had my bow there. And I was reading the instruction booklet and preparing. And you know what? That's exactly the easiest way to see the biggest buck that you've ever seen. When you have your instruction booklet in hand and you can't do a thing about it. You know what? The Lord had a way of telling me, it's not quite the way I want it. It's okay to sit in a tree stand in my mind, do a little hunting. But let's be careful that we don't get tangled up in it. Expensive radio controlled hobbies. And so learning to fly a plane, and there's lots of money can get put into that. And what does it do for God's kingdom? What is it, a toy or a tool? What are you doing with it? Now I know, we have some fellows that do crop spraying in Pennsylvania, and they have those things. They fly in across the field, and they collect data. They collect bugs to figure out what they need to spray, those drones, and they get pretty good at that. Oh, so maybe that's a tool, right? And they're using that, flying in across the grain, figuring out what's going on. But some people just have them for having them and documenting a whole activity, a family gathering or an outing, and fly this drone and keep taking pictures and videos of everything that's going on. Wait a minute. Have we moved from tool to toy and spent a bunch of money on it? And where's God in this picture? Oh, here's one for the ladies. What about a china collection in your cupboard that you never use? Did it grab a little bit of money to get it? Sits in your cupboard, you don't use it. Takes a little time to dust it off occasionally and keep it right. And you never plan. Okay, it's an investment. Maybe someday they'll sell it when you're gone and your children are selling out your things. How does God look at a china cabinet full of expensive china that we never use? Is it a toy or a tool or a idol? But we like it. It looks nice. What about extras on vehicles? A number of years ago, I was at a shop, an exhaust shop, and I went out behind the exhaust shop for something, and there was brand new exhaust pipes from the manifold back, catalytic converter and muffler and everything. A whole stack of them, brand new. I thought exhaust shops replace rusted out exhaust, and here's a whole bunch of brand new exhaust, and I didn't know what to do with this. And I said to the owner, I said, oh, what's this? You could tell they were used, but they look very, very new. Oh, he said, we take lots of brand new exhausts off, good exhausts off, because we put specialty stuff on. People want the sound of a Flowmaster or something like that. And they'll spend $800, $1,200, and they'll take a factory pipe off, and they'll put duals on, and that special sound. And they go out in the morning, and they get in that Chevy truck and turn the key on, and vum, 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 and they like that sound. I like the sound of a good running engine. I'm a mechanic too. But does God smile in heaven when I spend $1,200 for dual Flowmasters on my truck? And at the same time, he sees how many people around the world don't even have a Bible, his word. How many people around the world are dying without food? And how many opportunities you and I have to give to CAM or other places to help those people. And I spend $1,200 for the good sound. Does he smile and say, there's my son in whom I'm well pleased. He's serving me today. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands how many are starting to feel a little idolatrous. But I start thinking about these things, and I'm thinking about the Word of God. And listen, one of the goals of tonight's message is to send you away from here forever thinking about, am I an idolater? And you got to think about it at various places and answer it. And the answers aren't always the same in every situation. But every one of us better know what we're going to tell God the answer to it is. Fancy wheels for a certain look. I believe that's a Southern thing. Chrome stacks on my semi-truck. Somebody recently was talking about this man that has this fancy truck. In fact, in our area, there's a Kenworth dealer. And I'm told that Kenworth dealer is the top in the U.S. for selling accessories for trucks, because he's right in the Mennonite community of Lebanon and Lancaster County. Somebody recently was telling me about this brother that has a truck and he's concerned about it. And he said, it's one of those 717 trucks. And I missed it. I'm like, what do you mean 717? If you ever dial my phone number, you'll have to dial 717 first. And that's where a whole pile of us Mennonites are. And that's where a whole pile of fancy trucks are. And a whole pile of chrome and lights and all those accessories. And I'm afraid it's an idolatrous practice. I'm not against having a nice vehicle and keeping it washed and keeping it repaired and you know, dents removed and just keeping after it. But at what point does it become an idol, and how much dare I spend on it? How about going out west to hunt big game? How about spending a bunch of money to hunt something that you don't even intend to eat the meat? And then when you get it, you spend, do you know what those kind of people spend on big game hunts like that? $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000. And they go get this animal, and then, well, they're not going to eat it. You know what they're going to do with it? They're going to bring it back, and they're going to take it to a taxidermist. And they're going to spend another $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, and they're going to get this thing made into an image and set it in their house. Now, they won't bow down and pray to it, but every day they will smile when they see it and remember that hunt. I was successful. Come into our area, you go to one of the local car dealers, plain people, and there's images all through that place of all the big game hunts and even hunts outside of the United States. And I wonder, what does that look like to God? Well, even things like games that we play, what about volleyball? Can it become an idol, something that we just, you know, we have to have, and without it, it's not a good day. It's not a good get-together. Now, you look at that and you say, well, if it's something that we rally around and we have some quality social time as a youth group, we're together and play, there's a place for that. But if that's all that we can think about, it becomes an idol, can become an idol. How about technology, new cell phones? You need to get a smartphone so you can get the apps that go with it. New cameras or laptops. You know, a number of years ago while I was driving bus, I had an old phone. And one day I left early in the morning. I was taking a load of people about 4 hours north of us to a cabin, dropping them off and coming back. So it was about, I'd be away from the house about 10 hours total. And as I left that morning, I realized something's wrong with my phone. I believe the battery just like quit. And there was no batteries available, and there's no chargers for that phone anymore. So my phone battery was dead, and I'm going to take a run 4 hours north, come back down, and I can't call the boss. I can't call my wife. I just have to do it without a cell phone. And it felt really, really funny. I felt like something was wrong all day long. And I figured that, you know, my wife probably needed me and whatever. Nobody could get a hold of me. And, you know, probably when I would get back, it'd be like, where were you at and what's going on? So I did the normal thing, rushed home or whatever. And I was just like, to my wife, I was like, you know, honey, I'm back. I hope you weren't, you know, trying to get a hold of me today. She's like, no, what are you talking about? Like, the day was fine. You know what? You can actually do a day without a cell phone. But we get so used to those things, we got to have them. And are they tools? Are they toys? Where do they fit? Even the eating and drinking fad, eating out fad. See, Philippians talks about that. Whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. Eating out fad, spending money on luxurious restaurants. And when you can do something a whole lot cheaper, you go to the ice cream shop and you get a fancy something of ice cream, and you spend three times what you would spend if you would go to the local grocery store and get a 5-quart pail of vanilla ice cream and some Hershey's chocolate or caramel syrup and take it home with the family and fix up your ice cream and enjoy an evening around the house. Idolatry. Well, where are you in that subject of idolatry? Is idolatry beckoning your attention? Do you have a list of things? Well, you started crossing them out tonight. You're just like, wait a minute, I don't know. I probably can't do that. Maybe as a young person, you're sitting here saying, oh, I wish Dad weren't here tonight and hearing that. I'm sure he won't let me get that now. Listen, don't worry about your dad. Don't worry about you must obey them. Don't worry about them. You got to answer to God for that. And your dad and mom are trying to help you to be ready to answer to God for it. That's the important thing. That's the important thing. And as parents, what are we doing to help our children growing up? This I said at the outstart that I think this is a subject that we parents go wrong on so many times. And then it makes it hard for our young people. And so I want this luxurious maxi van with all the electric windows and all the fancies and everything. And of course, the young person's not going to buy him a Chevy maxi van. He's going to buy this hot little car. And I'm going to say, no, you can't buy the hot little car. But Dad, you want the hot big van. You see, we have to be careful. We have to be honest. Well, may the Lord give you grace tonight to make those decisions. It's Saturday night. I think we'll close. If God is speaking to you about idols in your home, in your heart, young people, go home tonight. When you eat a little ice cream before you go to bed, talk to your parents about where you were convicted about idolatry. It's one of the things that we need to do is talk about it so we can help each other. That's one of the values of a brotherhood. It's one of the things that we need to do to keep us on the straight and narrow way and not allow us to be swallowed in the things that Satan wants to swallow us in. So, Lord bless you. Thank you for coming. I was hoping to keep this shorter tonight, but the Word of God is precious and the subjects are dear to my heart. Come again tomorrow morning. Come praying that God would bless and fill us with His Word and Spirit again. Shall we stand for dismissal?